Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
We are back, and it is going to be a great episode. We have had a loaded weekend, a ton of action. We were on site for 10 games, almost in a row, but collectively, between the two of us, we were there for all 10 games, and it was thrilling. Big Dog, how you doing? I know you didn't exactly have a restful Sunday, but talk to the people here for a second.
Yeah, I mean, Mustang Classic weekend, best weekend of the year, I would say, besides national championship. It was a blast, so I will gladly take the lack of sleep for the nonstop 10 lacrosse games in a row, basically. So all good there. But then, yeah, Sunday, Swarm started up game, so was out in Delaware, or did a training in the morning, then out in Delaware. And was out coaching the boys. Rough start to the season, but, you know, you've got to battle through adversity, and this is just one step at a time. We're going to get better through it, so we're working our way through it. We're all good there.
How many games did you play?
It was a doubleheader, so two games on Sunday. Yep.
Coincidentally, you were not only not the only Division III team to play two games, A, in the same day, but B, there were lots of teams that played two really important games, and that'll be a great segue into the Callum Robinson Mustang Classic chatter. But before we get to it, let me give you a quick reminder. You ready?
Yeah, hit me.
The men's and women's NCAA championship weekends are heading back to Gillette Stadium, held jointly for the first time since 2017. From May 23rd to May 26th, there's nowhere else in the lacrosse world to be other than Foxborough, Massachusetts, for 8 of the best and most impactful games of the season. The action starts Friday with the Women's Division I semifinals, continues on Saturday with the Men's Division I semis, then championship action starts Sunday with Men's Division II, Men's Division III, and Women's Division I, culminating Monday afternoon with the Men's Division I final. This year, the Inside the Cross staff is proud to partner with the NCAA to offer you, our loyal listeners, $5 off all single-day tickets, both men's and women, by using the code ILPOD at checkout. So head to NCAA.com/tickets and enter ILPOD at checkout to purchase your tickets. You already know you're going to championship weekend, so why not get $5 off and help us show the NCAA how awesome our listeners are by purchasing your tickets today. Once again, that's NCAA.com/LaxTickets and ILPOD at checkout for $5 off of your ticket. Something I know the Big Dog is taking care of.
Oh, you better believe it. Can't wait to get my tickets through NCAA.com/LaxTickets.
You know who else I think is going to take advantage of this?
Hit me. Who?
Faith.
Oh, dude. 100%. Dude. If she's getting out there, you better believe she's doing this.
I feel like she's going to be the type to spread the word on the promo code for us no matter what.
Yep. She's our boots on the ground person. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Guerrilla marketing.
Yeah. Perfect. All right. Well, let's get all the way into it here. You ready?
Yep. Let's do it.
Things off, we'll do a quick run through of records. You want to hit us real quick with those?
Yeah, I got us. So, records through the Mustang Classic, you got CNU 2-0, Dickinson 0-2, big losers of the weekend. We'll talk about them. Gettysburg 1-1, Hamilton 0-2, Lynchburg 0-2, RIT 1-1, and Stevenson 2-0. Last three here, we got St. Lawrence 0-2, Tufts 2-0, and WNL 2-0.
And I'll hit finals real quick. Day one, game one, WNL 12, SLU 10. Your boy was on the call. So if you're looking for some hard-hitting details and some real insight, some true color into the game, go back, check that one out. You can find it. It's public on Stevenson's website. It's not that hard. Just do a little elbow work.
It was beautiful stuff, man. You absolutely crushed it, by the way.
Would you call it eloquent?
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely. You really brought some
insight. What if I told you my wife said I was funny? She was like, you did a good job, you were funny. I was like, I literally told zero jokes.
that's definitely a good sign.
Like, I was not up there trying to be a comedian. Like, I don't know what was funny, but that was not the compliment she thought it was going to be.
Okay, yeah, it didn't hit quite like you wanted it to. Yeah.
I was like, you know who's funny? You.
Yeah.
And then game two, day one, was a whomping. RIT 24-7. Tufts Hamilton, that one was a weird one. One goal in the entire half for Tufts. It goes to halftime at 3-1. Tufts ends up winning 14-8. CNU and Gettysburg gives us the stinker of the event. CNU winning that one 13-4. And then Stevenson and Lynchburg under the lights for the nightcap of day one. And that was a Stevenson 14, Lynchburg 8 in a game that went to halftime tied 6-6. So another what I would say is a weird trend of some odd runs and odd scores in general from the weekend.
Yep. And then day two, we kick it off. W&L took out Dickinson 11-8. That was a pretty good battle, but W&L comes on top, followed by Gettysburg 10, Hamilton 6. So Gettysburg rights the ship, gets back on track. Followed by CNU 16, Lynchburg 12, who put up a good fight, but the captains there really pulled it out at the end. Followed by the marquee matchup, probably of the regular season, and it definitely lived up to the hype for the first three quarters. You had Tufts 17, RIT 11, so we'll break that one down here in a bit, but absolutely a lot of fun. Finally, in the nightcap, you had Stevenson 11 beating SLU at 10 there, which was an absolute star-studded game. It was awesome. Every team was making plays. You had great goalie play, great specialist play, all around. So what a game there. 11-10 final for the Mustangs, though.
Yes, and some hard-hitting action all the way through it. You mentioned earlier that you have Dickinson as your biggest loser. We have a few categories to hit: biggest winners, best moment, MVP. Couple other categories potentially could pop up here and there, but let's start with adding one just as that alludes to biggest loser. You say Dickinson, tell us why.
Yeah, I mean, you can say a lot of it was on the first game on Friday, which that was just an absolute barn burner. 24-7, that was all RIT the whole time. I think there was one clear attempt maybe in the first quarter. Which just tells you that, like, Dickinson just had no answers defensively. The Tigers were making every one more pass, thus making the defense look silly, in my opinion. So RIT really just showed they were in a different class than Dickinson at that point, which really puts my Dickinson Final Four pick a little bit of an edge here at a crossroad. Wish I could go back in time and change that, but we're here now, so we're riding with it. But this show Dickinson just had a lot to work on, and then they really did battle W&L pretty good. They showed some fight in them, but that was really hoping that was one I'd be really hoping that they would be able to pull out on day two. Have a little bit more depth, show a little bit more fight in there, and end of the day W&L just had the talent and took it to them there.
Yeah, so depth, talent, all those types of things. And Tyler Spano had an incredible weekend at the X.
Oh, yeah.
I think if you were to go and give, like, again, we have some categories here, so I don't want to go tilting my cap, but you may get a Tyler Spano appearance later here in the episode.
Yeah, he was on fire and not taking anything away from W&L on day two, because them and Duquesne played very, very well that day, but... I just wanted to see a little bit more of Dickinson, so that's why I think ultimately they're the biggest losers of this classic.
Yeah, and I think it's a hard situation, right? You go into it and you want to challenge your team, but you don't want to end up getting too banged up, and so I think that they were missing some guys, and some of that was a bit precautionary, and at the end of the day, it's like to end up more battle-tested, so there's also probably an argument that, like, no, like, there are no losers. Everybody that shows up there gets two incredible games in a 48-hour span that really pushes your team and gets them out of their comfort zone and is the best simulation that you can find for winning a back-to-back, be it a Elite Eight in semifinal or a round of 32 in a Sweet 16. But that's no fun to say that there are no losers, right?
Yeah, agreed. And hey, Dan, it might be a different story if they lose both games, and especially like W&L, they lose 11-8. But let's say that RIT game the night before, they put up a good fight. Like, hey, I'm all about it, but that game was over in the first quarter. You know, that was a wash basically at that point. So you got to put all your eggs in that W&L basket at that point, and they just really didn't deliver at that point.
The product was tough, and the box score shows it. Like, it is particularly lopsided. But then to your point, like, you know, day two, they get off the mat a little bit and show some life and really fight, you know, a pretty good W&L team. So, yeah, Dickinson, you know, a lot of room to grow ahead of them. And with Centennial play kicking up here on Saturday, you know, the fruits of that labor hopefully are ahead of them if you're a Red Devil faithful.
Yep, not going to get any easier for him. Dan, if you had to pick a loser of the weekend, who do you got?
No, I think it's pretty clearly Dickinson, right? Oh, like, okay. You could argue. Yep,
you're sticking with me?
Yeah, no, I think you nailed it. I think if you're Lynchburg or the other 0-2 teams, right? Hamilton, Lynchburg, St. Lawrence. I just feel like at the end of the day, after being there and watching it, like, maybe you could put Lynchburg in this similar bucket as Dickinson, but like the product I feel like that we watched out of St. Lawrence, who gave W&L everything they could handle on Friday, and the product that they put on the field on Friday night in a one goal loss to Stevenson, who's now rattled off three straight ranked wins. I feel like it was just different, right? Like, if St. Lawrence and Lynchburg, after this weekend, you saw both of those teams, you know, playing and doing, you know, everything that you did. If on Wednesday those two teams played at Homewood, who do you take?
Yeah. It's a...
No, it's a question. Who would you take between the two of them?
I don't know. Tell me.
Who would you take? I can't tell you who you would take.
I want to hear your answer first.
You don't even know the question. All right, move us along.
I was reading something. I'm sorry. Shoot, all right, well, we'll keep moving.
Do you want me to repose the question, or should we just move on? And
no, I do want you to repose it, because I'm interested at this point. I'm focused on you.
Neutral site, St. Lawrence and Lynchburg, right? You asked me, like, what's the difference between Dickinson and those teams. Like, I just felt like the product was different, right? And I'd put Lynchburg and Dickinson in kind of a similar category. But, like, Hamilton and St. Lawrence, I don't know that, like, the product, maybe Hamilton belongs in that boat as well.
I think they showed some fight, man. They did really good. Definitely even against Gettysburg too, who's a solid team, but has some issues that got exposed this weekend. But, you know, put up a great fight against Tufts. They know him, divisional.
Okay, fine. You're right. Okay, so yeah. Hamilton and St. Lawrence, I think, are in a bucket that is 0-2 but had a decent product.
Yep.
And then Lynchburg and Dickinson, 0-2, but the product left something to be desired. And within that bucket, there's another smaller bucket that is, like, only Dickinson is in and is, like, kind of discouraged.
Yeah, yeah. The optimism is lower.
Yes. I would say. Yeah. The glass in that bucket... There's water in all the buckets, but the water in all of them is half empty.
Yep.
For Dickinson, and it's half full for Lynchburg.
Yeah. Yep. I get it.
Yep. I don't know if that makes any sense. But
I'm picking up like what you're putting
down. Yeah, I feel like that's a decent kind of visualization of what I was thinking.
Yeah. All right.
Let's flip gears. Let's go to biggest winner. Who do you got?
Yeah, we talked too much about losers. Let's go to winners. I'm going to take Stevenson. First 2-0 weekend since it started back in 2014, which can't believe it's been that long now. But, you know, 2-0, that's pretty crazy in the Mustang Classic, especially for a schedule that they put together. And then you alluded to it. They have three straight wins now against ranked opponents. So all big stuff, even though that last one is Dickinson that we just put down for 5 minutes straight. But, you know, end of the day, I still think that's a impressive, very impressive resume, and they're really building something in Owens Mills there.
Yeah, and right now they sit with just two losses on the season, I believe. You can fact check me on that. And they're Gettysburg and CNU, two teams that we have in the top 20. So, like, those check out, right? And then everybody else that they should beat, they did. And then they went and landed a win over Lynchburg and a win over St. Lawrence on back-to-back nights. And that comes just a week after dominating Dickinson. And I believe that that one was on the road, too. So if you're somebody that, you know, gives a little bit of a bump to that as well, throw that in the factor pile as well. So it's probably the highest ranking that the Mustangs have had since I've been in this role. And I think that I've been on the Mustang side a little bit larger than some of the other publications that do rankings, right? I don't know that they've been ranked as frequently as we have. And I think that they've kind of showed why we have thought that, and it's just kind of come to fruition now. And in the past, they've had a lot of these games and been in a lot of these games and played challenging schedules, but just ended up on the wrong side on the scoreboard.
Yep, agreed. I think this was some good vindication for them, and they should be feeling pretty good right now. You know, they've been battle-tested. It doesn't get any easier for them, you know, with Tufts coming down the road, but they're looking real good right now, I'd say.
Yeah. All right, anything else on them, or moving it to my biggest winner?
Yep. Oh, sorry, I thought you were CNU. My apologies.
No, my turn. All right, CNU. CNU is who I'm picking as my biggest winner. And I think that really what we've seen in the last, like, 2-3 weeks is kind of just like a mental shift and a confidence, right? I think early in the year you had that Adrian weird half that was like, I don't know, throw out the book. And then you had the Grove City double overtime. And I think we know that, like, the Grove City, like, is a harder out than people realize or want to give them credit for. But that's a harder out than perhaps people understand. And so still, though, that, like, led to some question marks or hesitations or whatever. And then I feel like a lot of that has been put to rest over the course of the weekend, specifically Friday night. I thought that they were dominant against the Gettysburg team that, you know, I thought that that was going to be one of the best games of the event. And CNU put an end to that thought, and particularly was excellent defensively. It's one of the things with the Classic that's great is we get to catch the coaches post game, and they do, like, a, you know, Division I style, professional style post-game press conferences and post-game interviews. And Coach commented in his that he thought that they were just – it was a full team effort, which I would agree with. But it really, really started with a detail-oriented and a dialed-in defense.
Yep. And shout-out to Mason Bellinger. Definitely playing great. You know, he stepped up for him. He's really shown why Coach Thompson has his faith in him. I think he's been playing well and proving that, so good to see you there. It was nice to see Declan in the warm-up, though. He was looking mighty fine. I was looking at you like, you know, if it came down to it, I'm sure Declan could step up and have a massive spot, but it is what it is. Shout out Mason, doing a great job there.
100%. All right, let's move it to best moment. What you got?
Yeah, I think I have to go, you know, even though they went 0-2, Andrew Miller for Lynchburg, you know, he had a stellar save. It was, I believe it was in the fourth quarter, but it was down at our end of the press box side. So we had a nice view of it. And, you know, guy dips underneath. It was in the second game. So who was that again? Second game?
Who was Lynchburg playing in game two? CNU.
Yeah, CNU. Yep, so yep, CNU guy ducks underneath, goes for the offside high finish. And then Andrew, out of nowhere, sweeps the underneath. Sorry, I'm acting this out on a podcast, so I'll try to stay in it. But you're sweeping underneath. Yep, sweeping over top. It was insane. It gets better and better the more I think about it. But yeah.
Let me clean this up for you a little bit. Can I?
Yeah.
Okay. It was an unbelievable save in a crazy moment. We're talking lefty goalie, and he's, like, falling. He's off balance. So the high right offside stick part of the cage looks wide open. And the attackman goes to stuff it in the back of the net in that spot. And I feel like, you know, when you think goalie one-handed save, you think sweep to underneath where they're, like, throwing their arm up with their elbow going to the sky. But in this situation, he just, like, with his left hand, tossed the stick across and then threw the right hand with the elbow to the ground. So he saved it with the top of his head. But it was all, like, it was a one-handed, like, as he's falling to the ground. It was spectacular. It was 100% the save of the weekend.
1,000%. Yeah,
save of the season so far.
Yeah, if anyone's got a better save, please tweet it at us, because otherwise I think that takes the cake right now.
In the running. Yep. Currently in the top spot. All right, I got two of what I'll describe as the best moments. Sue me. I'm not picking between them. The first, I'm going to go RIT bounce pass.
Yeah.
Unreal. Unbelievable. Again, I was on the call for that one, and I was in the middle of explaining how, like, the weight of the face off, like, even when they did win it, they weren't holding it and getting enough possession, and then Tufts goes and spills it, and then RIT's riding it back, and next thing you know, they have numbers, bounce pass, ball's in the back of the net, and I remember being in the booth just yelling, like, oh, and they have numbers. Oh, bounce pass! Oh, like, just losing my mind. As soon as I saw it, I couldn't help but scream, oh, bounce pass! But it was definitely a good moment from the weekend.
I had the AirPod in for the call. It was awesome. Watching in the booth, but then listening on the call.
Oh, let's go. Yeah. I love that. And then the other one that I'm going to go with is day one, game one. Which I think there's an argument that was the best game of the weekend. But day one, game's on the line, tied 10-10. And Hillis Burns gets the ball with a dodging opportunity in transition that exactly one person in the country takes, maybe two, him and number 20 for Tufts. So there must be something in the number 20 waters in Jack Regnery and Hillis Burns. They're two guys that, you know, will just go in transition, but Hillis gets it and is literally dodging 1-on-3. It starts with, you know, he picks the ball up and it's 1-on-1, but St. Lawrence does a good job of crashing into the hole, and now there's two guys there and, you know, a third guy just kind of lurking and ready to slide. And so it literally looks like he's dodging 1-on-4, and at some point, you know, he kind of gets collapsed on, and I remember, like, okay, we're gonna get a timeout. Coach McCabe's calling a timeout. He's calling a timeout. Oh, they got him. They're collapsing. It's going to spill it. Timeout. And then, nope. And all of a sudden, he just, like, breaks it off, bounces back to his right hand, and buries it on the run to give him an 11-10 lead. And ultimately, that goes down as the game winner in the game. And, you know, it's the spark that all they needed. And from there, you know, Tyler Spano makes sure that they get some possessions and all that type of stuff. But I thought that play was, you know, definitely very, very memorable.
Yeah.
Memorable.
Yep. Yeah, and this might be a good segue into our MVP talk, but up there for the MVP, you got to put the Patty Condon versus Tyler Spano just matchup in general in that game was off awesome. You know, good stuff, but for Tyler Spano...
Spano owns it, though. Like, I don't know. Yeah. I have to check the exact number again. But I remember looking at some point, and I believe what I have committed to memory is Spano went 18 of 24 in that one. So Spano, I don't know exactly what Condon's number was. Again, I think it's like 8 or 9 of those wins or something. And again, like, you know, Spano really owned that matchup. And especially down the stretch, it felt like he made his presence felt.
Yeah, he was.
Condon did have a big goal. Oh, maybe that was Tuesday. Maybe that was Sunday or Saturday. That was Saturday. My bad.
Okay. He did score a big one, but yeah.
He did have a big goal on Saturday.
Yeah.
To start the fourth quarter against Stevenson, and they're down 2, and he immediately wins it forward, no slide, buries it in the back of the net himself, and then that makes it a 10-9 game.
Boom. Yeah. But absolute game changer. Tyler Spano, great job there. But if I had to take an MVP for the weekend, I think I'm taking Garzone defensively.
Yeah.
Yep. The stat sheet probably doesn't say it either, but that first Hamilton game, you're looking at a straight defensive game in the first quarter. You know, you've never heard of Tufts being held to one goal in the first half. So The fact that he kept them in it, kept it alive, made sure the team knew it was a game, and they were always in it, just really led to that second half comeback. And then the RIT game, like third quarter, did RIT score? I don't believe they did. Yeah, no, they didn't score at all. So the fact that he held them there, made a statement in that third quarter, and then they just got deflated at that point. I think, he was the real, brick wall back there for that Tufts team, and allows them to do what they want to do offensively, and lets them know that they can go through these routes and they'll be just fine because they have a great presence in the back to keep everything locked and loaded up there.
I totally agree, and I commented on stream that I felt like he was another level of like poised and composed and calm and cool and collected in the cage for them, and I totally agree that so often the story with Tufts is the number of goals that end up on the scoreboard and the number of possessions they have and the number of shots that end up in the box score and a lot of other things that like trend towards the offensive side of the ball. And the defensive side of the ball, as a result, gets kind of underlooked. And I can't recall ever a time where RIT gets held to zero goals in a quarter or two and a half. Right, and so that's a game that hit halftime. It ends 17-11, but it hits halftime 9-8 with the RIT lead, and it ends 17-11. Both of those goals coming pretty late in the fourth, like borderline garbage time. No matter what, I mean, the result was at that point was known. So like, I think that is just like incredibly impressive, and yes, I think Connor is a huge part of it, and. Little known fact, but he was Liam Entman's backup in high school. So last year when Notre Dame won the national championship and Tufts won the national championship, Chaminade had produced two different goalies that won national championships in the 2024 season, which is pretty crazy.
That's not, yeah.
But I think it just goes to show, like, a longevity within his career at this point. He's been around. He's been, doing this thing for Tufts, and he's been there, kind of done that. And he's been just, like, at the top of playing elite lacrosse for, like, almost 10 years now, So
yeah.
Just thought that his composure and poise in the net was like super notable. And you mentioned that it doesn't really show on the box score. I think he only had 8 saves, but it was just a matter of how organized and collectively great that unit was. And so in front of him, you have Joey Waldbaum, who I think if I have to pick one, I'll give him my defensive MVP of the classic. Probably because he scored goals, which goes against everything I just said. But George Panagopoulos and Michael Ayers alongside him are just excellent down there as a close unit. And they started every game together last year as well. And then Ben Frisoli at the LSM is so crafty, so clever, so quick, so smart, has such a great stick, is so good pushing transition. And so, yeah, I think that they're just, a group that has a lot of contributors on that side of the ball. So to kind of limit it to those four guys is a little bit of a disservice, but I think that those polls are really the, kind of the core of the operation that lets Tufts play with the DNA that they do.
Yeah, agreed. And to continue on the Tufts love train, offensively MVP-wise, Brooks Hauser, if you talk about stepping up in a big time game, Jack Ragnery goes down at the end of the second quarter in that RIT game. It's a tight one, and it's very easily Tufts could fold at that point. Your best player is out. It's tight going into the fourth, really, and you can go either way. And Tufts decides, we're going to step up. Brooks does it, ends up leading the game, I think, with 4 goals. I think maybe 5 points total on the day, but absolutely dominating and taking over that game. And I think Tufts really show that they're not one dimensional. Like they can beat you different ways with Jack, without Jack. So they're going to be just fine. I think it led them to being very more well prepared going into conference play.
100%. All right, and then I'll hit you with my offensive MVP of the event, and he's a guy that last year kind of came on really strong for the captains, and that's Kevin Miller. This was my first time that I feel like I really got a great sense for his ability as a quarterback. Last year when he was playing, he was intermixed with a lot of really talented guys. And this year, you know, we've seen it and you've seen it on film, but seeing it together in person, you know, is a little bit different where we're right at field level and, you know, can talk about it. And I thought that if I were to give you criticisms of him, like pre-event or pre-season or anything like that, it would have been very much so like, can he handle the physicality that being a number one at this elite level of lacrosse requires? And I wouldn't have thought it beforehand just based on like size and physicality and strength, but he's tough and has this like way about him that he absorbs contact really well. And he doesn't take a ton of punishment. He knows like, you know, situations that are going to suit him well and goes to them as much as possible rather than, you know, banging heads and doing things against stronger guys that aren't going to suit his skill set. Plays with his eyes up, plays with his head up, has a bunch of assists on the year. He's already at 48 points. He had 2 goals and 3 assists against Lynchburg. Hit Gettysburg for 2 assists. We mentioned that their defense is pretty good. I was pretty impressed with his ability to quarterback a pretty good offense there for the captains. And they go 2-0. Tufts goes 2-0, and they play each other this week on Thursday. So there's no better time to really sink your teeth into being a D3 lacrosse fan than this mid-March stretch.
Yep, yeah, it's going to be awesome on Thursday. That plus all the basketball, it's going to be maybe like the best sports day of the year, potentially.
It's a little bit of an exaggeration, but okay.
Are you kidding me? No, okay. the first day of the NCAA tournament mixed in with possibly the best D3 game that we're going to see until tournament time. Like,
okay, fine. Good take.
Pretty good day.
Fine. All right. Yeah. Okay. I'll take it. That's a good take.
Thank you.
All right. Move us along here. Where do you want to go next?
Yeah. You got anything else about the Mustang Classic? We can kind of segue off that if you're feeling pretty good there.
I mean, I feel like we have to hit at least a little bit of, like, how much fun did you have? Like, what was your favorite non-lacrosse part?
The non-lacrosse part? Well, if I had to pick that, obviously the IHOP is up there for me. Which, you know, I starting the day off.
You know,
at
we
IHOP.
Can just get breakfast sometimes. Like, we don't have to. Like,
yeah. We should just start doing that because it's so delicious, especially at IHOP. If anybody hasn't tried the CineStix pancakes yet at IHOP, you're doing yourself a disservice. Go there right now. Get yourself a stack. You will not regret it.
Why is it that the waitress every time kind of smiles or smirks or laughs every time you specifically ask for the Funfetti?
Yeah. Well, I normally go Funfetti, and I mean, maybe a 30-year-old grown man asking for Funfetti pancakes is the funny one. But I felt like CineStix was a little bit more grown up, right? A little more adult of me?
No.
Not at all? Not at all?
Maybe. I don't know. None of it is adult.
So maybe there's like a secret way to order it, but I don't know. Either way, it's delicious. I got to get it every time I go now.
Totally.
Yeah. What about you?
I would say that my favorite part was just like, I mean, dumbed down or zoomed out, kicking it with you, buddy. But with that, we tried to do some different stuff. Tried to do some talking head. Tried to do some videos and that type of stuff. So I've got my work cut up for me for the rest of the night. Got to get this podcast turned around, edit it. We're working on some takeaways and going to have that in written form to go alongside with this podcast. We call that complimentary content, people. And I'm working on one more thing. So I'm not going to give too much detail on it under the premise of under-promise, over-deliver. And I'm very skeptical about my editing ability, so we're going to see what happens.
Hey, it's going to look great. I promise.
I'm less concerned about what it ends up looking like and more about the flow of it. But again, we're going to figure it out. We're going to give it a shot. And if it works, great. If not,
just throw some like transitions from like PowerPoint 2004 in there, you know, like like a little generic song in the background, maybe a little slide that plays, and boom, you're on to the next thing.
Let me get some clip art.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
All right, let's go ahead and look outside the Classic for a couple of games. There were a ton of important results, meaningful results for the rankings. We had plenty of movement in general with the top 20 rankings this week. If you haven't caught those yet, please go check them out. Kind of in free fall mode somewhat is Lynchburg, Dickinson, St. Lawrence, and then Stevens also dropped on the heels of a loss to Union. And then St. John Fisher and Babson are the two teams that fall out of the top 20. And St. John Fisher on the heels of losing to Trinity, Babson on the heels of losing to Springfield. And then the newcomers in their spots are Cortland and York. So with all of that information thrown at the listeners, why don't you ask some questions about it?
Yeah, that was some good stuff there. The Union one, I think the Union Stevens really surprises me, Dan. So how did a six point spread, that's huge. I know our man Sean Aaron's probably going wild for that, especially on Nick Lynch's 22 saves. Like that's that's incredible stuff. I'm sure he's head over heels down under over there. but
for those who don't know, that was supposed to be an Australian.
Yes, yeah, that's my best Steve Irwin. Yeah.
I think specialty play was huge. And again, like every time we talk about Union, I feel like it's quick reminder. In the Liberty League, take it to RIT as tough as any other team. Take it to RPI as tough as any other team. Take it to St. Lawrence as tough as any other team. Maybe not as notable as RIT, and partially because they've struggled to land the big one. But in a couple, you know, in just a couple of years back, you had RIT versus Union in the national championship. And so Union falling out of the top 20 is, you know, a little bit rare as of late. And then now to land that win feels like they're back on the right track a little bit, back on the typical trajectory that the last few years has served. And then you mentioned Nick Lynch, 22 saves. Obviously, that's a huge asset. And then in addition to that, Luke McHugh went 16 of 28 at the faceoff X. So, you know, really big-time performances there from the specialty guys. And then Peter Kipp, kind of your go-to offensive player, 6 points, 2 goals, 4 assists. And so that 4 assists kind of shows you that, like, well, your best player was also your best distributor, and therefore your offense was probably at the best that it has been all season. And that's how you end up with 17 against the top 10 team.
Yep. Yeah, that's a good call. I'm actually going back right now looking to see if Peter Kipp is a big dog's dogs, because we got to do a fantasy update.
Oh, yeah, that's a good call. We need to do some sort of fantasy update here at this season.
Yep. We'll Peter Kipp is a big dog's dogs. Let's go, Peter. Great job. Great job. Love that.
That's cool. I like that.
That's a great
call. And you were mean to Dickinson. I'll be a little bit mean to Stevens.
Okay.
Keyword, you were mean to Dickinson. I wasn't mean to Dickinson.
Well, just let me prep, post whatever say that with. I love Coach Webby. I still believe in him. I mean, I picked him as a Final Four team. I can't go back on that.
That was nice of you. Really nice of you.
I'm riding with them. So let that just be motivation, everything that I said.
Fair. Okay. Same thing for Stevens. I ride with the Ducks too. But I don't know that they were actually a top 10 team. They just were in a decent position and then got boosted on the heels of a few teams in front of them losing. So they got help by virtue of things that they don't really control. One of the things that boosted them early in the season was a win over, said Red Devils, which as you alluded to, doesn't quite look as nice as it did early in the year. They don't have any real marquee win at this point. And, I guess, you know, the film, like, it looks pretty good. I wouldn't say that it looks like it's anything that I would be writing home to mom about should I be in a position that I need to be writing to my mother. Fortunately, she lives right around the corner, so I don't have to do that. But like I said, I'm not 100% convinced at this point that Stevens was properly ranked up at 9 ahead of this week, going into that weekend.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's a good point there. And we'll move on to another team that maybe was not properly ranked a little bit. St. John Fisher dropping 16-12 to Trinity. What'd you see from that game? What was the difference maker there?
Yeah, so I feel like the biggest thing in this one for St. John Fisher was just like, you know, and again, I don't want to go putting the weight of the world on one kid or two kids or whatever, but I don't think that they got the goalie play that they were hoping to get going into that one.
Yep. Well said there. Yeah, I didn't catch too much of that, so I'll take your word for it. But that can definitely be a big game changer. But anyone you want to shout out on the Trinity side?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'll just to make the point a little clearer. Through 51 minutes of the game, 51 minutes, he only had 4 saves through it. And so at that point they do make a change and, the other kid comes in and gives him 5 goals or 5 saves before the end of it. So, you know, maybe that's a situation where they're kicking themselves a little bit about maybe they could have made that change sooner. Like, I don't know, exactly what you're thinking in that, but it's harder said than done. It's obviously a lot easier for us to sit up here and talk about it, at our desks, rather than in the moment, knowing that if you pull the kid, you know, it might have lasting impact through the season. There's just so many different factors to consider at that point, I think. And then for Trinity, you had a handful of guys go for 6 points on the day, right? And so that's always nice when you can get some big-time production from big-time players. Bo Page goes for 4 goals, 2 assists. Jay Ottaminelli goes for 3 goals, 3 assists. And John Kerkarian goes for 2 goals and 4 assists. So, between those guys, they definitely shouldered the load for the offense. And then they got 12 saves in Cage, which I think that 12 save number is, you know, one of the ones that once you get to 12, 13, 14, above that, you're probably into winning territory as a keeper.
Yep, I would say so. And then lastly, through the weekend, we had one of our more unique things with Grove City playing a doubleheader, but not even like the Mustang Classic where you play back-to-back on different days. Literally doubleheader in the same day. Damn, what the heck was going on here?
I don't know much about it, but I think it was just a quality of second opponent situation where Grove City probably thought that they could split the roster and bank on that being a reasonable outcome, even with, a split roster situation, and kind of focused on Kenyon and then lived through W&J and on the backside of things. It's particularly interesting because the geography of it, I think they probably could have played on any other day, but I don't know. Very D3, either way, very here for it. Yeah.
Yep.
Don't have much else to add to it. I didn't catch much of the action from Grove City Kenyon or Grove City WJ, but I'm sure that Grove City Kenyon game was pretty good. We should get that on the to-watch list for this week.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, if anyone from Grove City wants to hit us up and let us know if there's any cool backstory behind that or anything, just let us know.
Honestly, no comment. All right, moving on.
Yeah. All right, you want to get to some top 20 movement?
I feel like we kind of have hit it pretty naturally.
Okay.
But do you have any specific questions? I feel like the summary is, kind of what we hit earlier, just Lynchburg, Dickinson, St. Lawrence, Stevens kind of on the fall a little bit. And then St. John Fisher and Babson fall out. York comes in after beating Swarthmore and then having a pretty good win over Endicott as well, who I think Endicott, is pretty talented. Film for them and, watching that York game as well, they can sling it around. They're pretty slick on offense and then pretty organized defensively. So I think that Endicott team is pretty good. They could turn some heads. It wouldn't shock me to see them you know, win their conference and then get a decent opportunity to win a first round or second round game.
Yeah, definitely. And a team that we talked about on the verge a little bit before we move on here, Springfield. Tell me just a little bit about them. Haven't heard a ton about them this year.
Yeah, I think that they're one of the teams that, like, you know, we don't do votes for this, but if we did, they would be receiving votes. People would vote them. If, you know, you asked 30 people to submit a top 20, somebody would vote Springfield for sure. And I think that they're, you know, definitely, like, it wouldn't be crazy. It would be very worthy. And I think that a couple things going for them. I think that they're, you know, we mentioned this a lot. Like, one of the first things you've got to check for the eye test is athleticism. I think Springfield's pretty athletic. Short stick D-mid play is one of the things you got to check. I think that they're pretty good there. Jackson Lane kind of leads that effort, and I think he can really play. And then you have Coach Bugby, who's, you know, a legend of the game, legend at Springfield, and he's on essentially his farewell tour, right? This is his last season before retirement. And so I think you have that, like, rallying element of the locker room. And personally, I'm the type of, like, person or analyst, so to speak, if you want to give me that title, former coach that really believes in all of that type of stuff. The chemistry of a locker room, the commitment of a locker room, the camaraderie, the rallying effect is all so real. And I think that, you know, your coach being somebody like that, that has the tree that has the respect that he has, is really meaningful, is super, super meaningful. And so, honestly, I'm cheering for him. I'm rooting for him. Like, they have Amherst coming up, I believe, or Middlebury coming up, I believe. Somebody, another one of those next guys coming up. They already played Amherst, so it's got to be Middlebury. Mm-hmm. But they have some opportunities still ahead of them to make a statement that says, like, we are a top 20 team and we belong, that is not just beating a number 20, which they've done twice. You know, they've beat Babson and they beat Union, both of them at which point they were number 20. And I was at that point kind of convinced, like, I don't know, you know, that those teams are actually great. And so they beat two teams that were kind of on the border, right? And I think that's right where they are as well. But the film is pretty good. The rallying effect in the locker room, I think, is really meaningful. And, you know, yeah, I think that's kind of where I go with it.
Yeah. No, I think that's good stuff. I think I'm pulling for him too after you've talked him out like that. So, love that. Good deal.
Now let's talk Cortland and let's talk York real quick.
Yeah.
The Spartans, new to the top 20 this week. I don't remember when they fell out exactly last year, but it was, you know, at some point, and probably mostly a result of losing good games against close competition until last year late. They lost to Eastern as well, in MAC playoffs, and lost to Grove City, and had a couple other, you know, head-scratching results. So far this season, the head-scratching result is actually a win, in being a one-goal win over F&M. And so that's kind of a different twist on the head-scratching result this year. But what do you think when you see the Spartans or watch the Spartans? Who's a guy that maybe stands out to you for them?
Yeah, Nash Womack. I mean, it's easy for me to go right to the goal thinking of York, but he's been stellar in this past few weeks and been a real staple for the reason why the Spartans have.
How would you compare his skill set and style to the big dog's skill set and style?
Yeah, you know, skill set wise, I think we both have a lot of skill, so it's up there for sure. Style wise, though,
no skill little, set, little different. You're getting okay. Style, skill set, style, same word.
Yeah. Style, little different. You know, he's a little bit of a smaller guy, plays a little bit quicker than I probably ever was able to. You know,
you'd eat him for a little snack.
Yeah. But, you know, end of the day, he makes those big saves, which is what you need. You know, He comes in clutch. He's keeps them in games, and you know, really lets the offense play a little bit more freely, knowing that they have a good goalie, good defense backing them up back there.
Yep, and so also on York's resume so far this season is a 12-10 loss at WNL, a 15-12 loss at RIT, and then, as we mentioned, those victories over Swarthmore and Endicott, with the Swarthmore victory being an overtime thriller. And it was an incredible game, one that I think Swarthmore, I feel like, has to walk away from. They probably feel like they were the better, more talented team, and York feels like, after winning that they were the more battle-tested, tougher team that ended up winning more 50-50 ground balls. And so for Swarthmore, you walk away with lessons, and for York, you walk away with confidence. And I think for both of those teams, it could be exactly what the doctor ordered.
Yep, agreed there. Yeah, Swarthmore's been playing some good ball, looking to see them if they can bounce it back there. And then, yeah, Dan, talk to me about Cortland, a team we haven't really heard too much of this year.
See, I think we have, though. Like, we've talked,
about
them.
Their goalie play. We said they have one of the better goalies. Yep.
We probably haven't done them the justice that they deserve as a 5-1 team, that the only loss they have is RPI.
I think that's fair.
But we have – they came into the season with a solid handful of, like, preseason All-Americans. And then I think one of the things that, you know, is really helping them right now is that they beat St. Lawrence, right? And St. Lawrence beat St. John Fisher. St. Lawrence, I'm convinced, is good. Like, I'm convinced, based on the product that we've seen, is really a solid team. They lose the one goal game to Stevenson, who, like we mentioned, is very good. St. Lawrence has the two goal loss to WNL on Friday. Good team, good game. Gives them a ton of fight, and I think they're well coached. And so I think that win, like for Cortland to win that game, is really meaningful, and you know, is an impressive win. And so that was kind of the like start of the like eye opening. Like, okay, this team is probably a top 20 team, and then it's like, okay, where do they fit? And since then, they've beat Skidmore, Nazareth, and Scranton, which I don't know that any of those three opponents are, you know, spectacular, but they're handling business, right? And yep. Even though Skidmore, a one-goal win, you maybe want to see a larger margin of victory, but then they turned that into a 10-goal win over Nazareth, who, you know, there you have it, and then a 14-8 win over Scranton. And Scranton, you know, gave Dickinson some problems as well earlier in the year. So if you're going to go and play the, like, they beat them and score watching and all that type of stuff game, like, it lends itself pretty good to thinking that Cortland is a top 20 team.
Yep. Yeah, agreed. Well deserved for them, and looking for them to see if they can be a mainstay here on this top 20 list.
And then they also have, you know, a couple of opportunities to continue to prove it. And if you're St. John Fisher that fell out at their expense, you're definitely looking forward to Saturday when you get to play them.
There you go. No better time to show that you're better than then.
Yeah, we get the head-to-head battle just to, you know, put an end to the discussion. So
yeah,
that'll be nice. And they have Muhlenberg on Wednesday ahead of that. So, you know, one more opportunity for Cortland to polish some things up and, you know, get another game under their belt before they see a pretty good St. John Fisher team and then RIT right after that.
Yeah. Now, before we get into games of the week, let's talk about one other thing that's probably going to shake up the top 20 a little bit, and that's Babson blowing off some steam and taking down Middlebury. So that was tonight, which recording tonight, so it was last night for those listening. So that's going to shake things up. And Middlebury, we've seen drop a couple big games now in these top 20 matchups.
Yeah, Middlebury. You know, Middlebury's reeling a little bit. It's a situation where, like, it was hard to punish them early in the season for having, you know, they were 0-3, but still in the rankings. And to me, it was hard to punish them with those three losses coming to Amherst, RPI, and Bowdoin, right? And so, like, as people that want to see teams challenging themselves and playing tough competition, it's hard to then go and fault them for those three losses. And then they beat Union in overtime, and right, like, we think that Union was in that, like, you know, 20 range area, right? At least in consideration. Beat Babson, and then, or beat Bates, excuse me, and then lose to Babson here tonight. So, yeah, Middlebury probably not having the type of season that warranted the preseason ranking that they had coming in, and is now moving to that, like, on the bubble, I'm not sure if they are a top 20 team. And Babson, you know, you said it, letting off a little bit of steam, right? Lost on Saturday, and now they get to come back out on a Tuesday here and quickly try and flip the script, and did a good job of it, clearly.
Yep. Yep, agreed. So we'll see how that shakes out, see if we get any new teams in the top 20. That'll be a fun thing to watch. But this week we got some big games coming up Wednesday night. So tonight, as you're listening to this, make sure you're going to be tuning in to either Williams versus RPI, which should be a lot of fun, or St. John Fisher versus RIT. Both teams looking to make a statement and show that they belong up there at the top of that top 20 list.
Yeah, two good games there on a Wednesday night, and should be some great midweek action there.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. Then Thursday night, you got Denison versus Amherst, as well as CNU Tufts. I think that's going to be the game of the week right there. So definitely keep your eyes peeled for that. Dan, you got any predictions for CNU Tufts?
Predictions? I think we'll see some goals scored. I say that, but we said that going into the Tufts RIT game, and it's not like we didn't. 17-11 is pretty good, but... I actually did some math on that. Since 2021, those teams have played five times going into that matchup. So now we have to update it with the 17-11 score, but I haven't crossed that bridge. So heading into that game, there were exactly 160 goals scored through five matchups, leaving you with 32 goals a game on average. And in that one, you had 17 plus 11, so you get to 28. So technically fell four goals short of what been the average goal scored in that Tufts RIT matchup.
Yeah, love when a good under hits, you know?
And then with this one, it's interesting. You had 2024 last year, CNU went up there, and it was an 18-10 game. Tufts wins. Could this year be different? Sure. This year, Tufts is going down there, right? So at bare minimum, you get a venue change. Do I think that the outcome is super different? Probably not. I think Tufts comes out with it. I think it's going to be really interesting to see if Regnery continues to – if Regnery is hurt, or if he, you know, is able to get back out there and give it a go. And, yeah, in terms of predictions, I think – probably Tufts wins. CNU gives them a run. They'll have a ton of heart, ton of energy. They'll be well coached. They'll do a good job of denying the ball in transition. But how much can they do that, and how long can they last? I don't know. I do think that CNU defense was pretty organized this weekend. And so if they can continue that momentum and continue that kind of chemistry as they go into Thursday, then they'll have a shot.
Yeah, agreed. And you never know, too. This is going to be tough spring break trip. So, you know, spring break, anything can happen. Things get a little wild on spring
break. High school world, you have a lot of that going on right now where teams are taking trips down to Florida or, you know, wherever. And high school kids not prepared for the moment, the maturity. Yep. D3, I think you get a little bit more of the prepared for the spring break trips. But it's out of your rhythm. You know, you're out of your nature, you're out of your locker room, prep and all that type of stuff is a little bit different. So, yeah, you're definitely could be onto something.
Thank you.
But if I'm a betting man and my house is on the line.
You're going Tufts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can't fault you there. Agreed. I would probably do the same. But I digress. Anyway, and then this weekend we get into conference play. This weekend should be a lot of fun. You got Gettysburg-Swarthmore, which should be an interesting matchup. Gettysburg down a little bit after the Mustang Classic. Swarthmore really hungry for a win.
You don't think that they flipped the script with Hamilton on Saturday?
Dude, no, not really. You know, Hamilton, not taking anything away from them. I think they know how to play Tufts really well. So I think that's where the allure from them comes from. Great goalie play, so not taking anything away from them too much. But as Gettysburg, as a big team like that, I know it was day two, but I expected a little bit more of a dominant win against Hamilton. So I'm a little bit hesitant to say that this is a really, really good Gettysburg team at this point.
Got it. I think they are very good. I think they're just flawed facing off. And that has a lot of domino effects, right? Like, you have to try and find different ways to make up some of that possession gap. And it just gets you out of your natural, like, okay, we don't have to worry about that. Like, let's just play great 6-on-6 defense. Let's be efficient with our touches on offense. And we don't have to play any of these, like, weird games or, you know, work hard to find a solution at something other than, like, let's just use our face-off guy and be great there, you know? Like, that's an oversimplification, right? And they're dealing with some injuries in that spot as well that doesn't hurt or that doesn't help. But the number of wrinkle effects that struggling at the dot as much as they are has on a team, I think, is definitely a concern if you are a fan of the Bullets. And part of that is a lot of what we saw on Friday night.
Yeah, agreed. And Dan, let me just ask you one more question about the Bullets, then we can move on from them. But, like, watching both of their games this weekend, who's their guy on offense? Like, they don't have someone that they can turn to when things get bad, and they're like, all right, put it on your back and take us there. Like, I didn't really see anything from that, which maybe that's part of the allure of the offense, where, you know, all six guys can be dangerous. But I feel like you really need to start with that.
I think that kind of hits the nail on the head. Is like it's a bit of a 1-6 approach, and you know, it's an attack the short sticks, get them spinning, and everybody can kind of hit you. But to your question of like, you know, whose team is this type of a thing? If the ball's on it's a 10-10 game, ball's on the end line, someone has to pick it up and make something happen with 10 seconds left in the game. Who does it? I think they have Jack Dunleavy pick it up. And so Jack has been there, done that, been around a little bit. Had a game winner against Salisbury a couple years back. Maybe it was last year, 2 years ago. But he's kind of the straw that stirs the drink, I think. And right now he's got 12 goals and 7 assists, so he's at 19 points. It doesn't technically lead the team in points, but I do think that he's like the alpha of the offense. Leading the team in points is actually Charlie Johnson, 15-5, 20 points, lefty shooter. But again, I think that the better playmaker, better distributor, better quarterback type of player is Jack Dunleavy.
All right, fair enough. Just looking to see more from them there, but we'll keep moving, and we'll have RIT host.
I don't think that you're wrong at all. Okay. Like, I'm not disagreeing with you really. Again, I think that it's just not a full team issue. It's a flawed at the faceoff X, and then have a domino effect of things from there. But a good team, and if they can get things figured out there, you know, definitely will be continue to be on the rise.
Yep. Fair enough. Rest of the day Saturday, we have RIT hosting RPI. That should be a lot of fun. And Stevens hosting Tufts. So big trip there for Tufts. And finally, Salisbury hosting Stevenson. Three big games there. Dan, which one of these excites you the most?
Yeah, I think the conference battles are awesome. Gettysburg and Swarthmore is a great way for them to kick off conference play in the Centennial League. The way that I see it, I think those are the two likely teams to meet in the Centennial Conference Championship. I see both of them getting there over Dickinson. Even though Dickinson's won it a few years in a row, I think that's the way that I see it playing out here in 2025. I think RIT RPI is another one that's similar. It's just been an awesome battle the last few years. It's given us some RPI upsets over RIT. It's given us some of the best, like, hot goalie gets in the zone. Next thing you know, the whole team, like, has a belief in the system that's in place for them to go and capitalize and actually win it. And that's happened. And so, yeah, I think that those two are the ones that, like, I'm most excited for. And then Stevenson, hot on this win streak, coming off of the Classic, now has to go and drive out to the Eastern Shore and see Salisbury, who is going to be very prepared. Going to be very, very prepared for them. So just from, like, a how do I expect that game to go standpoint, I'm a little bit more intrigued by the Gettysburg, Swarthmore, RIT, RPI result or actual matchups, I should say. But certainly we'll be keeping an eye on those other ones as well.
Yep, agreed. All right, so I'm going to hit you with a bet of the week, Dan. You ready?
Yep, ready, Freddy.
Yep, I'm going to go RIT, RPI.
Yep.
We're going to go 3.5 for RIT since it's at home.
I'll take RIT.
Oh, okay. Looking for.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to be mad off of a loss. They're going to be mad off of a loss. They're going to practice hard as shit all week. They're going to address a few things, and I could see them winning by more than 3.5, especially after, like, who was the Liberty League champ last year?
Who was it? Good question. RPI?
Who'd they beat?
Yep, RIT.
You got it.
Yep, bingo. Bingo. Look at me. I'm a walking encyclopedia for D3 lacrosse.
That, my friend, is a big old fact.
Totally. All right, you got anything else for us here, Dan?
No, I don't. It was an awesome weekend. Had a ton of fun with you. 10 lacrosse games. I guess I missed, technically, the CNU Gettysburg game. I kind of ended up missing the best one, and that was to run over and catch a high school game on Friday night. And so I was on the call for that as well, so called 3 games between that 48-hour stretch. Was pretty tired at the end of it. And, yeah, like I said, great time. Had an awesome weekend with you, and can't wait to do it again next year, honestly.
Yeah, 100%. It was awesome. You guys are awesome. Stevenson is awesome. You know, they put on a great show for us there. They get the whole box set up. They have a great staff that works with us. So shout out to everyone at Stevenson for putting up with us and doing such a good job.
And shout out to a couple of fans, right? That was kind of fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Big Dog got stopped by a friendly fan that just wanted to say hello and thank you. We met a couple other big time D3 pod fans. So that's always cool as well.
Always, yeah. You ever see us out in the wild, you come up and say hi.
And you'll know who he is. He's massive, yeah. and always wearing something Baltimore Swarm.
Something, yeah. Walking billboard for Baltimore Swarm.
All right, let's let the people go. We're at like the hour 10-minute mark, and make an edit or two. So it's been definitely a hefty episode. We're at mid-March, right? And so there's been a ton of movement, a ton of action, and we still have a ton in store. So thanks so much for tuning in. We appreciate it. Be sure to share this with a friend. Send it to somebody on your team, a fellow tailgate member, right? Maybe you made a new friend this weekend at the tailgate, at the potluck. Somebody's kid's mom made a delicious meatball meal, and now you want to thank them by sending them this episode of the D3 Pod.
Great idea.
So, yes, get that done. Thanks so much for tuning in. We appreciate it. Peace.
Love y'all.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.